Pakistan's economic crisis is worsening with the rupee sinking to record lows against the dollar. The IMF is sending a team next week amid a standoff with the government over reforms. So how is this crisis affecting Pakistan's people and what does the future hold? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. Pakistan's economic crisis is deepening, with the rupee this week hitting its lowest level on record against the US dollar. Foreign exchange reserves are running out. The state is holding only enough to pay for vital imports such as fuel for another 3 weeks. The IMF has cut off funding in a standoff with the government over reforms. That's money the country needs to keep going. An IMF team will visit next week for what are expected to be tough talks. Now, all this comes as the country is reeling from its most devastating floods in living memory. It faces deep political divisions, too, along with high inflation during an uncertain global economic climate. We'll be looking at what's behind the crisis with our guests. But before that, our correspondent Kamal Haider has this report from Islamabad on how people there are feeling.
It's another day at Islamabad's Friday Bazaar as people go around shopping for essential goods. But there is bad news on the economic front. The Pakistani rupee tumbled against the US dollar by almost 10%, and that too from a government which was promising to bring change to Pakistan. According to the Financial Times, the country is on the brink of collapse and an economic crisis which could be comparable to what happened to Sri Lanka, which ran out of foreign exchange reserves. Pakistan's foreign exchange reserves are at an all-time low, and the country is trying to negotiate with the IMF, which after the devaluation of the rupee has agreed to come to Pakistan to discuss its conditionalities to resume that bailout package for Pakistan. But economists warn that money will not be enough to address Pakistan's key economic problems. Industry is shutting down because energy costs have been going up. Imports are stuck at the ports because the banks will not open the letter of credit because of an acute shortage of foreign exchange, particularly US dollars. We've been speaking to people on the ground, and this is what they tell us.
Where I was earning 500 rupees a day, even then I was happy as things were affordable. But now, even if I'm earning three times that, still it's hard to survive as prices are beyond our reach.
Both buyers and sellers are worried due to high inflation. Look at the devaluation of the rupee. Obviously, that'll increase the petrol prices and other commodities. Unfortunately, this is a total failure of the current government and wrong policies which has brought the country to the verge of collapse.
The devaluation of the rupee will hit the people hard. They are already struggling to survive with essential commodities. And they, of course, will be apprehensive because of the knock-on effect on the prices of essential items. Pakistan is importing wheat, which is a staple in this country because of acute shortages. And this, of course, will mean that every essential commodity will see a price hike, something that the people of Pakistan can ill afford.
Well, Pakistan has been hit by a series of shocks, all contributing to its economic problems. The worst floods in living memory killed around 1,700 people, with widespread devastation costing around $30 billion. There's deep political division, too. Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif and his predecessor Imran Khan, who was ousted in a no-confidence vote, blame each other for the crisis. Power outages to save money have caused chaos and hit businesses. The state's foreign exchange reserves have shrunk to just over $3.5 billion. Well, let's bring in our guest now for today's show. From Islamabad, Nilofar Afridi-Kazi. She is a disaster management professional. From Peshawar, Akhtar Ali Shah, a political analyst and a former secretary to Pakistan's Government, Home and Tribal Affairs Department. And also in Islamabad, Abid Hassan, an economist and a former advisor to the World Bank. Welcome to Inside Story. Thank you so much for joining us. Mr. Abid Hassan, in Islamabad, if I can start with you, what led to such a significant drop in the value value of the Pakistani rupee, and what does it mean for a country that's already facing multiple crises?
Well, I mean, it's a culmination of following terrible policies, economic policies, especially fiscal policies, monetary exchange rate over maybe 3-4 decades. So for the last 1.5 decades, knowledgeable people, policy analysts have been writing about it, have been speaking about it, that unless reforms take place, Pakistan is headed for a crisis. And surely this was predicted. Now, the thing is, if we look back 30 years, earlier the crisis was every 5 years. The duration of that crisis has been narrowing, shortening, and the magnitude has been increasing. So now, I mean, even if the IMF were to bail us out, and we will probably have another crisis in 2 years or even less than that, because the whole economy is now hardwired for a boom and bust cycle.
Right.
So unless we have deep reforms, which will be painful, we will have another crisis, I don't know, in 12 months, 18 months, despite the IMF program.
But just looking at the more recent crisis and the plunge of the rupee, Pakistan abandoned control of its currency in order to meet the IMF's demand, right, to liberalize the exchange rate. Will that be enough to bring the IMF on board, in your opinion, now, and get this bailout going?
I think one of the fundamental pillars of any IMF program is there should not be a multiple exchange rate policy. And Pakistan had three rates over the last 8-9 months. I think that was a bad policy. So clearly, I mean, it seems that the government has decided to unify the exchange rate and make it market-based. The other is, for decades, Pakistan was following a very bad pricing policy on energy. Even though most of energy is imported, we were selling it at below import costs, we were selling it at below production costs. And for at least 2 decades, the IMF and the World Bank have been pushing Pakistan to rationalize energy prices. I think that's the second thing on the table, which they will require Pakistan to adjust energy prices. Mm. And of course, all these things will lead to inflation. The key thing here is that at this point in time, it's a bit like cancer. Anything, there is no treatment without pain. So the important thing is, and the IMF continues to press any country on that look, one needs to protect the poor from loss of income or high inflation, and the rich must bear large burden of that pain.
Okay.
And that's the important thing that one hopes that the government of the day and the political system and the key stakeholders are able to figure out a program that protects the poor while having the rich pay for the burden.
All right. Niloufer, in Islamabad, you have today more than 9,000 containers that are stuck at ports which are carrying essential goods. How bad is the situation today for the average Pakistani citizen? How are people able to cope on a daily basis with the skyrocketing inflation?
They are not. Thank you for inviting me on the program. I would like to add to what Abid Hassan was saying. The IMF bailout is only a stopgap. The average Pakistani is poor. And so the reforms that the IMF is suggesting is only for an injection for money, which will not actually feed the poor, which is the vast majority of Pakistanis and the question that you have asked of me. And all the natural disasters that we have only multiply the existing problematic in Pakistan, where the average person is unable to earn, unable to pay taxes, unable to be self-sustainable in the best of times, let alone when there's an international crisis, etc. The question to be asked is, in an agricultural-based polity, in an agricultural-based economy, Why are we importing essential goods? Why have the international community and the government of Pakistan, which it follows its lead because it borrows so much, why are the structural reforms that we are constantly being asked don't focus on fundamental reforms, not only in the energy sector or tax sector, but to
Niloufar, who or what do you blame for the crisis?
I blame the class that is the permanent state managers of Pakistan for the last 70 years. Their priorities of where they want to invest in Pakistan's economy, polity, human development has resulted that the vast majority of this country cannot look after itself. And all the international aid, whether it's IMF, bilateral, are stopgap measures. Just as Abid Hassan just mentioned, whether we get the IMF or whether we get China or America, the EU, ADB to help us, that is just a stopgap for 1 year, 2 years.
Okay.
It does not address our investment, lack of investment in Pakistan, in Pakistanis.
Okay, Akhtar Ali Shah, let me bring you into the conversation. As Abid said, an economic crisis in Pakistan comes around every few years. But this time around, the internal political crisis and the recent flooding seems to have made things worse. To what extent are the political tensions that we've seen, the ouster of former Prime Minister Imran Khan in a no-confidence vote, the protests that we've seen, to what extent is the political instability shaping these economic problems?
Certainly, politics cannot be isolated from economics, and economics can't be divorced from politics. We call it political economy. Today's issues of economics are tomorrow's. And all political parties, when they go to the people, they have their manifestos where they promise good things of life to the people when they come to the power. And today, this economic growth is not development, as is defined and has a wider connotation. It is not merely measurement of the economic growth, but it also includes social development, as mentioned by Madam Kazi. So if there is instability, naturally there will be strikes, slowdowns, then there will be disturbance for supply chain in the whole of the country, and there will be low productions. So a conducive environment is always required for economic growth.
Right. Well, what about the security situation? Can I ask you about the security situation, please? Because it would seem that the Pakistani Taliban have been emboldened by a Taliban-ruled Afghanistan nearby. To what extent is that a concern for investors today who are looking at Pakistan?
Of course, when we compare the statistics compared to the last year, there is a surge as far as terrorist activities within Pakistan, and in particular the province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Balochistan. And they are now increasingly targeting the law enforcing agencies. So now there is a fear and sense of insecurity among even the general citizens. And the traders and the businessmen, those are who are prosperous, they are being threatened, and extortion calls are being given to them across the border even. And even, you see, the provincial assembly of the province, that has been dissolved. And according to the constitution, there was a requirement to appoint the day within 90 days. But so far, the government of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and the governor who is under obligation under the Constitution to announce the date.
Okay.
But he is on record that the elections may be postponed due to economic emergency and incidents of terrorism.
And
when a governor of the province
Ali Akhtar, I'll come back to the issue of elections later because, of course, Imran Khan, the former prime minister, wants elections to be held. I'll come back to that in a moment. But I want to come back to the economic situation and ask Mr. Abir Hassan in Islamabad whether Pakistan today is at risk of becoming another Sri Lanka and defaulting.
I think I would, hate to say this, but the probability is very high unless immediately a government is able to satisfy the IMF and they sort of disburse their next tranche. Once the IMF disburses $1 billion, then there are other bilateral countries, especially Saudi Arabia, China, maybe, some Gulf countries, who basically said, yes, we will put in $1 billion, $2 billion once Pakistan, has an IMF program.
Do you think the government is in a better position today?
Our reserves would probably go up from three.
Sorry to interrupt you, but do you think the Pakistani government is in a better position today to comply with the demands of the IMF? Is the government in a better position today to meet those demands?
Look, the thing is, they've come in. Now they are sitting in the saddle. If they don't comply and Pakistan goes the Sri Lanka route, I think the chances of ever coming back into politics is zero. If they comply, sure enough, it'll be painful, but at least there's some probability that when the elections come around, they could still contest.
Okay.
So from the government's perspective, I think they were kind of resisting all these changes, hoping against hope that somebody will bail them out. And ultimately, none of the friendly countries came forward to the tune that was needed.
Okay.
So my point is, it's a bitter pill, but they'll have to swallow that.
Okay. Nilafar, I want to come back to you and ask you more about the situation of the average Pakistani citizen. And I know you've worked in flood-affected areas. You've been, involved in relief operations there. So I wanted, if you can, to tell us about, give us concrete examples of how Pakistanis today are suffering, whether it's in big cities like Islamabad or Peshawar, or whether it's in flood-affected areas. How are people living on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, we'll focus on the flood-affected areas, but the crunch is being felt amongst 99% of the country. The permanent powers are and those who live off government subsidies, those who have enriched themselves over the last 70 years, they are insulated from the shocks of this country. But the average person and those who are affected in this round of floods, 2022, don't forget we also have had floods in 2010, and then we have regular flooding as well, which doesn't capture the national or the international imagination, but since 2022 has, so we'll talk about that. That has hit the most destitute parts of Balochistan and Sindh. These two and a little bit of KPK as well, and a tiny portion of southern Punjab as well. But the vast majority that were hit were in Sindh and in Balochistan and in areas where the human development indicators are abysmal and by any standard, by the national standard, but also the global UN standards for living. Government of Pakistan and the provincial governments of Pakistan have let down these citizens for the last 70 years. The floods has only exacerbated it. So, for example, women have given birth without housing. They continue to remain without a roof over their head. Children are without doctors. You have no hospitals. There is not enough medicine. You have high malaria incidence, like 80% communities, 90% communities with massive critical healthcare needs with absolutely no medicines, no doctors, no housing, food insecure. Okay. They're malnourished.
Really a raft of issues. Let me ask you, Niloufar, if the IMF were to put the money in today, do you think it would get to the people who need it the most?
No, it will not.
And why do you think that is? And how can we change that?
Because the reason why is the allocation and the so-called structural reform is focusing on areas which benefit primarily the upper and the middle class in the urban areas. Where government chooses not to invest in the social development sector and the human human development investment that requires to pull up the average citizen. More than half this country is illiterate. This is a multi-generational investment that you need to develop. Okay. And that is not the concern of the IMF.
Okay.
That is the concern of government of Pakistan and not this government alone. The previous government and the government before that and the government before that, they are frankly part of the problem.
So it's a deep-rooted problem, really. Okay, let me ask Abir Hassan. So what do you think is the way out for Pakistan, Abir Hassan, and what economic policy should the Pakistani government adopt to address these economic difficulties?
So, in the most immediate term, the only policy they need to do is follow the IMF reform program in letter and spirit. So they get immediate inflow of foreign exchange so that they don't default. And some sort of normalcy comes to the importation of goods. But beyond that, when I say beyond that, I mean in the next 6 to 12 months, they'll have to address the whole issue of energy pricing because the energy sector is bleeding billions of rupees a day. And that's part of the reason of this crisis. They've kept energy prices cheap. So when the energy prices are cheap, you suck in more imports. So you have to price energy right so that the demand for energy goes down and imports go down. So that's the next one. You see, the important thing is you can't think medium term or long term if you're going to sink in the short term. So in the short term, the important thing is you don't sink. And the only way to avoid sinking is you have to implement the IMF program in letter and spirit.
Right.
And then as you get a breathing space, I think the key stakeholders of this country need to get together and agree on a common platform of economic reforms.
Okay, let me
this thing will just keep coming back and haunting.
Let me give the final word, if I can,
to
Akhtar Ali Shah. What is the way forward for Pakistan, to avoid sinking, as Abid said there? And I know that the former Prime Minister Imran Khan is pushing for elections to be held this year as soon as possible. They're scheduled for October. Will holding elections change the direction in which Pakistan is headed?
We have a constitution in Pakistan, and the constitution has demarcated all the areas, including the elections. As far as Imran Khan's party is concerned, they were in Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. The assemblies of both the provinces have been dissolved, and now there is a stipulated period within the Constitution and Election Act 2017, wherein the elections are required to be held within 90 days. But the governments are avoiding to hold the election on one pretext or the other. So the way forward, to my mind, is let there be elections within the province, and later on, then elections to the National Assembly can be considered. But First and foremost is the elections to the provincial assembly in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and the province of Punjab.
Okay.
But if these elections are divided, it will send wrong signals, rather negative signals, to the investors all over the world, and our economy will further suffer.
Okay, let's leave it there.
Will be upheaval.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We'll leave it there. We've run out of time, unfortunately. Thank you so much for joining us today on this very important discussion. Abid Hassan, Niloufer Afridi, and Saeed Akhtar Ali Shah. Thank you all for being on Inside Story. And thank you, too, for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And, of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fully Bat Thibault, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.